It's that time again, Scott. It's time for a Health IQ quiz. And you know what? Health IQ, as you know, is a life insurance company pairing healthy people with healthy policies at the best prices available.
Which is what we're looking for.
And they send a quiz every now and then via email and available at various spots. And you seem to put me in the position of answering.
As always, I'm the quiz giver. You are the quiz guesser.
And guessing is the right term.
Today's quiz is workplace health.
Ooh, okay.
Specifically, the four-day work week, helpful or harmful?
Well, helpful for my recreation schedule, but maybe harmful for my economic forecast.
Here we go. Question number one. Working longer than 8 hours in one day increases risk of what?
Cortisol levels.
A, cancer. B, losing vacation days. C, amnesia. Or D, sickness.
Oh, I'm going to have to say reduces the risk of what?
Increases the risk of cancer.
Sickness.
Sickness. And your answer is correct. Working shifts longer than 8 hours a day increase the risk of acquiring a contagious disease and increases the total sick days, absences, in a business.
Yeah, absolutely. You wear yourself out. Your immune system isn't as strong. Go ahead.
Question number two.
Ready.
Studies of family work conflict find that such conflicts negatively affect what for employees? Wait. Often without being noticed.
Well, Scott, you got to clarify that. A family work conflict?
Yes.
So what does that mean?
Conflict between your family and work.
Okay.
Find that such conflicts negatively affect what for employees without often without being noticed. Quality of sleep.
True.
Bringing kids to the gym.
Negative.
Bone density.
Not.
Omega-3-6 ratio.
I'm just going to go number one, sleep.
It's because that's your favorite subject. And it's actually right. Work-family conflicts has detrimental effects on your sleep quality.
Well, absolutely.
According to research. Yeah, it isn't always obvious, but raises chronic disease risk.
No more obvious than a bone density issue. You can't really see that.
All right, last question of the quiz. A four-day work week that is still 40 hours or more is often called what? Compressed work week?
No.
Extended work week?
Yes.
Diminished work week?
Negative.
Extra work week.
Well, not an extra work week. I'm going to say, what was that middle finger that you put up? What is that?
That's FU.
No.
Which one? Compressed work week.
No.
Extended work week. Okay, I'm going to think you're wrong.
Okay.
It is wrong. Sorry, you're incorrect. The concept of the compressed work week is about fitting a standard number of work hours into four-hour days instead of five with a three-day weekend.
I'm just going to claim I didn't understand the question. Is that okay?
You could do that. Go to healthiq.com/TRN and learn a little bit more about health insurance and how you can qualify for reduced rates for life insurance. Under Armour Mountain Running Series is coming to a close. By the time you get this podcast, it will be underway in Copper Mountain, Colorado.
Another beautiful sight, and more than just trails, all kinds of festivities. I mean, a gathering of people.
It's a three-day festival of trail running, including seven separate distances.
A distance for everyone.
They do. They have a 5K, they have a 10K. They have a vertical challenge. They have a marathon relay. They have a half marathon. They have a marathon and a 50K.
And I think Michelle Barton said you should do them all if you can.
Ooh, for 3 days. That would be a heck of a training plan, wouldn't it?
It would.
But you can still, if you got this, you can still go register and get a discount if you go to uamountainrunning.com and enter the code TRNATION. You get 20% off of your registration fee.
You know, like anything, ultra running and trail running takes a little planning, and I'm certain that Under Armour just isn't sticking their toe in the water. They're going to be around for a while, and this race series, I think, is something that's going to be growing, and you can count on it.
They've done a really good job with this mountain running series and just promoting the healthfulness and the tribal aspect of trail running. They're getting into trail running, and they have some shoes that are out right now, and they're working on some new ones coming up. So go take a look at their gear, and if you're in Copper Mountain or around the Colorado area, go up and enjoy some high-altitude festivities.
And like all festivities, sometimes you don't have to actually be in the race to enjoy the race. So get around and get around the people and enjoy what's going on.
Under Armour Mountain Running Series.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of the wide, worldwide ultra running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast with me, a complete imposter here in London, England, and your two real hosts over there with a skeleton behind them very early morning in the studio. It's Scott and Dom.
All right. Are we ready?
Yeah.
There's a bunch of like old brothel hookers like buried out here.
But I know it's on the upper edge and you guys have won a couple of awards. And
I've never prepped for a podcast ever.
Oh, that's what you're doing.
Okay, we'll clear that up. That will, the group of the nation and podcast downloaders are very sophisticated.
They are.
They're unlike any other group out there. They're tolerant. They ignore our many imperfections, and they'll be able to substitute the word. No problem.
They will.
All right. We ready?
Yeah. Yeah, I did get into a new rhythm up there on that run. We could talk about that. Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
I'm Scott War, and today we have one of our favorite guests back on the show, the Sock Doc.
It's Dr. Stephen Gangemi.
And I don't
know.
Hey! Hey, Steve. Do you want to guess off the top of your head how many times you've been a guest on Trail Runner Nation? I was surprised.
I'll say this will be 10, maybe.
Wow. Ooh, that's pretty close.
That's
what were
guess.
You going to say? I already told Don.
Yeah.
Were you surprised?
I was surprised. What's the number is?
This is number 12.
Ah, very good.
Oh, cool.
First one being almost 5 years ago.
And my understanding, this is the best one yet. So let's kick it off.
That's the one we pre-recorded is the best ever.
So today's topic is sleep.
One of our favorite topics.
And we hope
theme at Trail Runner Nation.
We hope not to be so effective that people fall asleep during this podcast. We hope to keep their attention and talk about the importance of sleep because we talk about it a lot.
And Steve has written an article recently called Sleep, the Other Half of Training. So Dr. Gangemi, why is sleep so important for athletes?
In a sentence, please.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Yeah. In one sentence?
Yeah.
Timer, go.
It's a necessary biological function,
okay.
Period.
why do we sleep?
Is that all you really want?
Do we know why we sleep?
Why do we sleep? We sleep to recover. We sleep to heal tissues. We sleep to improve metabolic, physiological, neurological function.
Okay.
I mean, it's part of our life cycle.
Let me ask this question.
Our daily life cycle.
Let me ask this question. Is sleep most critical for the brain itself, the central nervous system, or for everything below the neck? Do we depend on sleep for recovery down below, or is it up top really the essential, you know, motor that needs rest?
I don't think you can or should differentiate between that.
Okay.
Actually, every organ in our body has its own individual body clock.
Hmm.
So your liver has its own individual body clock. Your pancreas has its own individual body clock. Your spleen and every single organ in your body actually has its own individual body clock. So, and that's actually a big part of good old conventional medicine today is that they're trying to develop drugs specifically actually for military use, certain drugs to help tissues heal faster, to help certain diseases heal faster, to keep soldiers up longer in a healthy manner, hopefully. But they can tell when someone's functioning well or when someone's not functioning as well as they should based off an organ's natural circadian rhythm. So you can actually, or the science is going where you can actually hopefully target an organ's specific circadian rhythm to address a certain therapy at a certain time based off that organ's normal circadian cycle.
So I want to get into that a little bit, and I don't want to put you on the spot because some of these questions might be, well, they just don't know yet. They recognize that it's there, but they don't know. What's the most durable organ? What just doesn't seem to really need much rest or downtime, and it's just a soldier and it can work through anything?
I don't have a specific answer for that.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, I've never been asked that question. I've never even thought of that question. I mean, I think you can look at organs, you know, like someone's liver, you know, that can be regenerated significantly. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I saw a patient recently, and when she was younger, she lost 65% of her organ, of her liver, 65%. So mm-hmm. she's left with 1/3. And now 25 years later, she has like, it's basically she had 95% of her liver. So it almost 100% regenerated. I actually think your liver could regenerate that much. I knew it could regenerate. Hmm. That's pretty amazing. Now, does that make it more durable than another organ? I mean, in terms of regeneration, it may be. Hmm. I mean, someone might say that an organ that you could theoretically live without, like your spleen or one of your kidneys, your gallbladder. I mean, I think everybody has sort of their favorite organ, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, one they think might be more robust. Yeah. I mean, who doesn't, right? I mean, you have your favorite color and you have your favorite organ, you have your favorite trail to run on.
Yeah.
Right. What's your favorite organ, Don?
You know, I was hoping you were drinking that to Scott because he volunteered that he had a favorite organ. I was silent over here and you asked me. So
you asked me the question.
True. I'm still exploring my organs and, you know, I have a few of my favorites. So
I have a question. The whole concept of each organ having its own individual clock, are there some organs that are sleeping during the day and wake up at the night to help you regenerate? I mean, or are they all kind of on the same?
No, they're definitely not all on the same. And so they're never, like an organ's obviously never not working, right? I mean, let's just take it back. It's simple, like our pineal, you know, this gland in our brain that makes melatonin, right? And most people know, you know, melatonin ideally should the hormone's actually working all day. People think that your melatonin levels just come on, you know, at night in response to decreased temperatures and decreased light, right? If it's dark out and cooler temperatures, then your melatonin levels increase, which induce sleepfulness, right? But your melatonin levels you have melatonin levels even right now as you and I are talking, 3 o'clock my time, you know, noon over Pacific time. So you have a melatonin level active right now. It should ideally be low. Don's is still completely screwed up from his 206.3 mile race or whatever the hell he just
did.
0.5. I'm sorry. I thought he crawled the last. Didn't he crawl the last?
I did. So we can't. We don't officially count.
We're not counting that. Yeah. Or did you drag him across the line, Scott?
There was no muling.
So you have, you know, in terms of like. Chinese medicine, actually, you have a 24-hour circadian body clock. It's called an orary clock, and every two hours it changes. So an organ is more robust or more active at a certain time of the day. I think this is worth something we're going to talk about in a little while because it can actually be very important due to how someone may sleep or not sleep well at night. For example, the most active time of day for your liver organ is between 1 a.m. and 3 a.m. So if you have some liver stress going on, maybe you're drinking too much caffeine, too much alcohol, whatever's going on, then you'll have trouble sleeping between 1 and 3. But that doesn't mean that the other 22 hours of the day that obviously the liver is not working. So you have highs and lows between organs. And based off those circadian rhythms, you can evaluate the function of those organs perhaps better than if you were evaluating that at a different time. Or you could perhaps see improvements in certain therapies, whether that be, you know, herbal, nutrient, diet, pharmaceutical, whatever it may be. If you do something to challenge or some sort of therapy for that organ based off that organ's circadian rhythm. So although your pineal gland runs your melatonin levels and that part of your 24-hour clock, you actually have something in your brain called your SCN, which stands for suprachiasmic nucleus. And that is almost like another cog of the wheel that runs the circadian rhythm of your entire body and in turn sets a specific circadian rhythm. And again, this is very much newer science for each and every organ in your body. And the theory now is perhaps for each and every cell in your body is running off some circadian rhythm. Some function better at certain times of the day than others, some based off temperature cycles, some based off, you know, light darkness cycles.
Now, I want to hit a point that you said earlier and then make a statement. You said, I'm still screwed up from running 82 hours.
Oh, okay.
And sleeping, six hours? That certainly, yeah. I screwed myself up and interrupted some circadian rhythm that I had established. So I want to talk about, overtraining and how that affects, and that was definitely some overtraining. As I looked down at my watch as I reset between sections, it said rest for 18 hours, recovery 18 hours, and all I really had to do was then get back on the trail, so it was zero. But this circadian rhythm that you're talking about and over-fatiguing, what happens to a person out there that just keeps pushing and pushing and pushing and doesn't allow for that normal rhythm? That's question one. And I always say, don't ask two questions at once.
But you're going to.
I'm going to hold my next question.
Okay. Do you have it written down so you're not going to forget?
I'm going to ask him.
Okay.
I'm going to ask him.
What was the first question?
I don't even know the first question. But I felt, and Scott observed, that when I was out there, I fell into a new cycle,
yes,
a new rhythm. So maybe that's the real question, that I got used to an hour and a half nap, up and go again. And it seemed like I got into this new hour and a half rhythm that seemed to work out pretty good. I felt pretty rested.
But I don't think you could have continued to do that for a long time.
I could for 82 hours.
You could.
So pick up anywhere in there you'd like, Dr. Ganjimi, about creating new rhythms, about overtraining, about overtaxing a body, anything you want.
I'll pick up there because I think actually a really good word for that is that you are overtaxing your body. You know, it really comes down to is what is healthy and what is not. I mean, clearly someone can go, I mean, you just slept basically in what's 82 hours. That's like 3.5 days or something,
yeah,
right? So in 3.5 days, you slept relatively less than what you should be sleeping in one day. So you kind of like missed 2.5, if not 3 days of sleep. Now how does that affect you, or what is going to be the ultimate effect in your body? I mean, that's hard to say for short term as well as long term. I mean, obviously there's things like you may be, you might notice like your memory is not as sharp and your digestion might not be working as well. I mean, there could be various body functions that just are not working optimally at this time that will take some time to regulate. And based off your age, your health, your genetics, your fitness, and all these things, they'll slowly come back into some sort of normalcy. But I think with all the biohacking and everybody wanting to try and do more with less time today, more and more people are they're basically causing more health problems by trying to, take sleep out of the equation. You know, like, oh, I only need to sleep, 3 hours a day or 4 hours a night, and I can save those other 3 or 4 hours where I would typically be sleeping and do whatever activity or train more, or these sorts of things. And for some people, some people are more resilient than others, you might say, and some people might not feel that effect, where I know for me, after a couple of days of that, I'd be pretty miserable. I'd be tired. I'd be mentally fatigued. I'd be physically fatigued. Some people can clearly endure more than others. Now, how long does it take to catch up to someone? Again, I think there's lots of variables in there, and some people there's not a direct cause and effect. You know, in other words, if you get sick with some, terrible disease, whether that's an autoimmune condition, a cancer, or, some neurological condition, after doing that for 10 years, most people aren't going to associate that with, or may probably won't, with, lack of sleep or some health condition, because we're so cause and effect directly orientated. You sleep 4 hours a night, you seem to be doing just okay, but the cumulative effects, how are those going to add up after months or years? It's hard to determine that because it just is so individualized. I personally think everybody should be sleeping. I mean, for the most part, of course, there's always exceptions, but people who sleep less than 6 hours, and probably most people who are less than 7 hours, are actually not getting enough sleep. Hmm. Now whether between 7 and 9 is normal between, say, 7 and 9 hours, I think there's lots of other factors between that. There's sort of a normal for this, and how it affects someone. So it's a very broad topic, so I'm kind of maybe giving you too broad of an answer, but I think it eventually catches up with someone. A lot of people just don't realize that. Maybe like a bad diet too. You might have something, you know, a soda or, you know, something you shouldn't be eating. We've talked about this in the 11 other podcasts. And, you know, you might not feel miserable that one day or that week. But, you know, over the years, stuff catches up with you when you do it over and over and over again. And you don't recover in this case.
So sleep is, it's an individual thing. And we vary depending on who we are for a normal amount of sleep that is needed. Let's take someone that is dialed in his or her sleep to be a normal person. And now let's add in this person is now becoming an endurance athlete. Do they need more sleep than they did before they were training at a high level?
Yeah, the quick answer to that would be yes, they would. How much more is going to be determined on how well their diet is, how well other recovery periods are. In other words, you know, just like active recovery or downtime, how their overall stress is. You know, I think when I wrote the Sock Doc Training Principles way back in 2011, probably when that site started, a whole 6 years ago, you know, the whole training equation that sleep is obviously a part of. And the more you train, right, the more you need to rest and recover. And obviously part of that rest and recovery is sleep, as well as, you know, perhaps deep breathing exercises, meditation, you know, the sort of active recovery downtimes. So if you're increasing workload, if you're increasing duration, if you're increasing intensity, then absolutely you're going to have to balance that training equation with more recovery based upon how well or based upon the degree to which you're pushing your body in the other direction. So yeah.
Would you have any thoughts or any recommendations? Is it better to get all of that sleep in one chunk, or maybe throw in a siesta in the middle of the day, a power nap?
Yeah. So I mean, I think there's definitely good evidence of people performing better, athletes as well as, you know, people just in the general workforce when they have some sort of nap, you know, 10 minutes, 30 minutes, somewhere in between there in you know, the afternoon after lunch or wherever. But I think then we get into another topic here is, you know, like what is normal? I mean, if the three of us are all training for whatever, you know, let's say we're all doing some ultra of some sort, and, you know, Don sleeps an extra hour a night, so now he sleeps 9 hours a night, and that's how he recovers. And Scott, you know, you sleep after lunch for, you know, 30 minutes, and that's how you recover. And I don't sleep at all, but I'm feeling okay. You know, which one's normal? I mean, I think it all depends on how we're all training, age, fitness level. You know, there's just so much involved in this. And it really gets down to two is like what is actually normal? So is an afternoon nap, is that normal or is it not? Well, it really depends. I mean, if you need that nap to function throughout the day, well, that might not be a really healthy thing. Now, if you need it to sustain the amount of training you're doing, you know, I can see that, okay? You know, you're training harder for a race, you're trying to perhaps peak for something or whatever you're trying to accomplish, but now that results in you needing to recover more. You know, it's this gray area again, like, is that normal? Is that healthy? Some would say, you know, clearly say, well, no, because now you're pushing yourself so hard, you need to rest that much more. It's affecting you, so you need to sleep more than what you normally should. Again, the question is, what's normal? Where someone else would say, yeah, well, now you're sleeping, you're able to recover properly for that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's dig into that normal thing, if you don't mind. You know, kind of like that old story about the frog in the pot. You know, you turn up the heat, he really doesn't know that it's boiling until it's too late to get out. That story. How do we recognize that we are falling into sleep deficit? You know, we might be walking zombies and just surviving on a big Jamba juice of something caffeinated. Go ahead.
Well, I think a lot of people are. I mean, I remember when I would train for Ironman days, at the same time I was in chiropractic school, and, you know, you're studying a lot, and I was training at the same time. I mean, have you guys ever taken like that afternoon nap? I remember some of my naps would be like around 5-6 o'clock.
Right in the middle, right in the middle of one of my classes. Yes, I took that nap.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I hear you. And you know, you wake up and you got like drool coming out of your mouth, or the nap where you wake up and you don't know what the hell time it is.
Yeah.
Like you think it's like, you're like, what is it, like 4 a.m? And your roommate's like, no, it's like noon, man. Like, what the hell have you been doing? I mean, when you get into that like delusional state and your body is just so taxed that you're having certain symptoms like that, then those are other warning signs that you're pushing yourself too hard. I mean, I talk about in the article too, I think, or somewhere on one of my sites, is like when you're falling asleep, whether that be at nap time or whether that be at a normal nighttime sleep pattern for you, you know, let's say your whole body jolts, either a limb jolts, you know, kind of like twitches, or I mean, I remember when I would train hard, my wife would tell me like your whole body just like levitated off the bed like an inch, like your whole body just like jumps. That's a super sympathetic stress to your nervous system. I mean, you're in sympathetic dominance when that happens. So that's like a classic, you know, adrenal gland, endocrine system, neurological system, overtaxing symptom that you get when you're falling asleep, when your body just jolts like that. So you probably do need, well, not you probably, you do, that you definitely do need to sleep more. But again, then we're back to, should you be sleeping more or should you be training less, right? I remember, you know, way back before when I used to really watch all the Tour de France before all the drugs were revealed, I remember Floyd Landis once saying, you know, he was of course later, you know, revealed all his drug use. He said, no, you can't overtrain. Overtraining is impossible. You're always underrested, you know, or if you're overtrained, you're actually not training enough, because if you're overtraining, you're actually not training enough. So the training is too much for you. You need to train more, right? I mean, you know, think about that for something. He actually said, I just remember that documentary or that speech or the broadcast with like Phil Liggett and Paul Sherwin back then, you know, after one tour. He said, no, you cannot overtrain. That means you train improperly. You didn't train enough. So it looks like you're overtraining, or you just didn't rest enough. So you can look at these things so many different ways. And I think you have to figure out what works for you, you know, how much you can tax your body. I mean, I'm all for pushing my body. I mean, if you run 200 plus miles, if you do any endurance running, of course, or endurance racing like I've done, or any things that we've all done, and many of these listeners have done, I'm all for that. But of course, once you do too many of them, and you do too much high intensity, or you do too many long duration events, or even just training bouts, you know, it eventually is going to catch up with you. And I see some people in the area here who have just done so many ultras. They don't seem to be injured. They don't seem to be sick, but they look 10, 15 years older than what they really are. You know, they just look beat up. They look like they need to sleep for a couple of years, you know, to catch up. A
couple of years.
That's my question. Can you catch up? So
the science says, yes, you can.
Okay.
Like, yes, Don can catch up. Now, how efficiently you can catch up, and to what degree you can catch up, I'm actually not sure on that. Like, in other words, I'm sure you can't like, you know, miss, you can't like go from 8 hours of sleep a night to 3 and take those 5 hours and after a month catch up the 150 hours, you know, now in September or something,
okay,
you know, in the next month. So I don't know where the point of diminishing returns or the point of no looking back, we might say, is. But you can definitely catch up to a certain degree. You know, I think, I mean, again, sleep's a normal circadian cycle. I look at it like, you know, there's still nutritionists out there and dietitians and, you know, people who talk about, you know, just diet in general and health. And you know, I say, well, you know, you can get all your protein in the morning. You don't need to like eat protein throughout the day, or you can get, you know, certain calories at certain times of the day. I don't believe that. I think you should, you know, be, you know, eating certain meals at certain times throughout the day based off many other factors. That's not the subject of today's podcast, but the same with sleep. I don't think you can, you know, jam it all in, you know, and obviously, or you probably wouldn't be able to force yourself to sleep too much, so you don't have to sleep the next day or catch up on the back end, you know, so much. I mean, we are circadian human beings. And then even when you look at, can someone catch up, is that healthy and normal, you know? I mean, I remember talking to a few years ago, I saw this special forces guy in my office, you know, the iconic like badass, you know, special forces soldier. And I love hearing these guys' stories and, of course, appreciate what they do and everything. And, you know, I said to him, so his name was Jose. And I go, so what's the longest, Jose, you've ever gone without sleeping? And you're like, one of your tours over. I think it was in Afghanistan at the time. And he said, 72 hours, no sleep. Wow. And I'm like, did you feel like sleeping? He was like, no. I go, well, how, like, why didn't you feel like sleeping? And I knew part of the answer was the obvious, like, if you fall asleep, you may get killed, right? Where he was, like, you're going to stay awake. And I don't think unless, I mean, I can't relate to that. I don't think anybody can unless they're in that situation. You can kind of imagine it. But then he also said, you know, what the military are giving us, like, we're taking something, we don't know what it is that is keeping us awake. So they're taking a substance that is, you know, stimulating their system, or hopefully not overstimulating to stay awake, and they don't know what that is. And then they're also, if anybody, if you guys or anybody listening, I'm sure you all know military guys, they're all jacked up on caffeine. You know, I mean, most military people, they're drinking, you know, some caffeinated beverages, you know, whether that be Mountain Dew, Red Bull, you know, an energy drink, coffee, of course, tea in the morning throughout the whole day. I mean, they're jacked up on caffeine, you know, 24/7. And that's not an understatement. You know, is that normal that they're not sleeping? Are you seeing these people function and perform well in their jobs? Sure, a lot of them are. A lot of them aren't, too. But again, we're back to, well, what is healthy? Is someone functioning, you know, doing, they appear to be doing okay. Are they truly getting by? Or are they just, you know, are they running on fumes and the shit's going to hit the storm eventually in their life, perhaps with some, you know, terrible, you know, disease or, you know, whatever it may be. And it's because of how they push themselves so hard for the last, you know, many years.
I would love to learn to listen to my body closer in this category. You know, I'm thirsty, I drink. I'm hungry, I've learned to grab some calories. And I really would like to be able to listen to, you know what, I'm fatigued, I'm not performing as well. This normal run is a little bit more challenging. I'm going to exhaustion faster. I just don't have the recall that I should as I'm forgetting some things. Those types of clues I think I should take in and say, you know what, I need some sleep. I need to shut down a bit. And I'm probably getting all of these clues coming in all the time, and I just ignore them. It's like, I don't get it. I don't understand what's going on with me. I just accept it. But I need to start thinking of sleep as a solution, like calories or fluids.
That's right. Well, you know, I think you're taught to think that way today in society. I mean, sleep, if you think about it, many people perceive sleep as a weakness. Yeah. You know, you rest more.
Yeah.
You're a weak person.
Right.
Oh, you know, you need to sleep 8 hours a day. You know, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, who does that anymore? I mean, I sleep 6 hours. And I mean, you even see it with kids today. I mean, the typical high schooler I see here in Chapel Hill, I mean, they're taking hardcore AP classes. They're done with school, you know, still at 3 or 4 o'clock. Then they go to their sports. They get home. They're doing homework till 12 midnight, maybe 1 in the morning. That's no exaggeration. And then they're up at 5, 6 the next morning. They're sleeping 5 to 6 hours if they're lucky. I shouldn't even say 6. They're sleeping 4 to 5 hours a night, crashing on the weekend. And I mean, they're not catching up on sleep. They might be a little bit on Saturday and Sunday, but there's not enough time before Monday hits. And you know, it's a rough life. You know, how that affects them mentally and physically. So, and then, you know, how is that relating? Well, look how many more kids are on stimulants today, whether that be, you know, Vyvanse, Adderall, Ritalin, all these other type of stimulating drugs. Of course, I'm not saying it's just from lack of sleep, but I'm saying it's a big, big part of it. You know, how people function today. I kind of joke around. I feel old at 43 years old. I mean, when I was in college, staying up late for me and the guys in my dorm room, and I went to the University of Miami, you know, it was not the tamest of schools. You know, there were cool frat parties every weekend night. But you know, nobody was up to like 6 in the morning, 5 in the morning. We all kind of called it a night around midnight, 1, even 2, that was kind of even pushing it. But today you see kids go out at that time. Like, you know, they're up till, or they go out at 1, 2 in the morning, and they're typically going to bed, you know, when we're getting up 8, 9, and then they're sleeping till the afternoon. So people's circadian rhythms are, significantly affected today and their actual sleep patterns. And then you even get in to make matters worse, you know, are you actually getting restful sleep, right? Because just because you're asleep doesn't mean that you're sleeping well, right? I mean, look at an extreme situation of Michael Jackson. That guy was taking 34, I think it was 32 or 34 Xanax, right? You're only supposed to take like a half, okay? He was taking 34 of them just to sleep. And when that stopped working for him, that's when his medical doctor, who we all, you know the news behind, that's when he started putting him on that anesthesia-type drug to get him to sleep because the Xanax stopped working. So he wasn't even sleeping when he was on that many drugs, of course. He was appearing to be asleep, but it's not like he was resting and recovering. And you see there's a lot of people who are taking sleep drugs today, whether that be, you know, Lunesta or Ambien or, you know, melatonin, you know, even a natural hormone type drug that you can get at any store pretty much today. So, I mean, a lot of people are taking drugs or substances to fall asleep as well as to wake up,
So yeah. That's how Michael Jackson did the moonwalk. So on Zen.
Yeah. Oh boy. Oh, Freeman.
Sorry. What do you ask?
Well, my question is let's say that you're not getting restful sleep. Is a sleeping aid a good solution so that you can actually get a good restful sleep, or is that just masking and portraying your as sleep and you're really not getting good restful sleep?
So when you say sleeping aid, do you mean like a supplement, a medication?
Yeah.
A mask over your eyes?
No, I think that there's...
Sorry,
some,
Scott.
I think, let's take the mask out of it. I'm talking like a over-the-counter or maybe it's a prescription sleeping aid.
You're definitely masking. You're definitely masking. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So let's ask this question. How do you get good, restful sleep?
Okay. Well, where do we start?
Hey, I don't want to pause on your question. On our last thread, can I just ask a question there and then move on to that? So remember that question, okay? We're talking about our ancestors and living by maybe a campfire and subject to the light that comes from the sun only compared to today where we have artificial lighting and you know, handheld devices that emit, emit light up. How are we disrupting our own rhythms and our world by creating this artificial daytime all time?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, a lot of the paleo people talk about, you know, the blue lights, right? And blocking blue lights like our technology after typically 8 p.m., you know, if you're going to be on your iPad or your computer, TV, whatever, you know, that's why they have those like blue light, the artificial light blocking sunglasses, you know, turning your computer screens down, that sort of thing. So it's all cumulative, you know. I mean, we're humans who are living in a very unnatural world today. It's kind of like the more we evolve, the less we are fitting in a world that allows our physiology to function the way we were designed, right? So absolutely. I mean, the more you overstimulate your body in terms of, you know, in this case, light or technology later into the evening, the more you're going to affect your sleep. But again, here's a good example. Like, let's talk caffeine. Most people know that, okay, if you did, you know, caffeine will stimulate your system, right? It will keep you up if you perhaps drink too much, or it'll wake you up if you drink some, depending on your tolerance. But I've seen plenty, and people might know this themselves. You know, you can drink one cup or two cups or whatever your caffeine tolerance level is of coffee and be done drinking that at 10 in the morning. And that can affect how you sleep, even if you go to bed at midnight. You know, so I've seen that before in people. It's not like you have to consume coffee or a caffeinated substance, chocolate or whatever, after dinner time. So a stress in the morning can still affect you later on in the evening. And, you know, of course, an emotional stress if something bothered you, you know, at work or at home or whatever, and, you know, you're kind of like, you know, you can't calm your system down. And even back to the circadian rhythms of our organs, you know, like I mentioned earlier, like the liver circadian rhythm of 1 to 3 in the morning, that's actually the most common time someone wakes up, you know, and it's based off something taxing the liver. something perhaps they're trying to detoxify that's common in women who have estrogen detoxifying issues, estrogen dominance throughout their monthly cycle. And they might notice that they're waking up between 1 and 3 in the morning because of hormone detoxification issues. I know when I've trained hard, and even when I still do now, if I train too hard, I'll wake up right around 3. And that's, you know, that's because of your liver is responsible for regulating your blood sugar levels. It's where we store some glycogen, a little less than 100 grams. And that's what keeps our blood sugar stable at night. So if your blood sugar levels are dropping too much because you train too hard or you push yourself during the day too hard, then your liver will release a bunch of glucose. Well, glycogen will be broken down to make glucose and to normalize our blood sugar. The thing is, that's done at the expense of stress hormones, epinephrine as well as cortisol. And if you have too much of a drop in blood sugar, and therefore your body wants a significant spike in the blood sugar to bring it back up, you're going to get a stress response. And that's why people will like wake up in the middle of the night, like wide awake and can't get back to sleep, because they literally gave themselves a jolt of adrenaline, epinephrine, or cortisol.
Hmm.
You know, so there's so many factors. I mean, sleep is a great indication of how you're functioning. It really is. And unfortunately, and now you're back to like, again, like you were saying, Don, that, you know, like what is normal, and listening, you really have to listen to your body, because, you know, 7 hours of sleep is truly normal for some people. Where for me, I need like eight and a half hours of sleep. And that's good sleep. That's, you know, falling asleep. So in a minute, we should probably talk about like what's normal sleep. And I probably got off subject from the previous question.
Nope, it's all good.
And I
wonder about somebody dreaming if they could get a shot of adrenaline or cortisol or something that could really disrupt a normal sleep. Dreamers. I mean, I imagine, you know, things seem very real.
A bear chasing you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let me ask this real quick question. So recently I read an article, and I think Don and I talked about it. We may have even talked about it on the podcast, where if you're thinking about taking a power nap to drink a Diet Coke or drink a cup of coffee or something like that before you go to sleep, so that when you wake up after 30 minutes, you can wake up refreshed and ready to go instead of feeling lethargic and, oh, I just woke up.
The caffeine would kick in about 20 minutes.
Yeah, the caffeine would kick in.
You wake up supercharged.
I think that's a bunch of hooey, but I want to get your opinion.
That's, I would use another word other than hooey, but,
hooey?
You guys,
Rui?
See, yeah.
Doesn't have to rhyme with, right?
Fooey. Let's just go. That's fooey stupid. I think we're back to, how is that different in a way than someone saying like, I need coffee to function in the morning? I mean, I'm not anti-coffee. And I don't want people to think that I'm anti-caffeine. I like chocolate. I even like coffee every now and then. But like, if you, I ask my clients, my patients, like, if you drink coffee in the morning, do you drink it because you like it or because you need it? A lot of people will say both. But some people are clearly like, yeah, I need my coffee or I cannot function. Well, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, now you're deriving false energy from a substance, from a drug in this case, caffeine, actually. Yeah, we don't think of it as another stimulant, but it is. So, you know, that's no different than, you know, taking caffeine or something before your nap to now trying to artificially stimulate yourself to have that desired effect because your body's unable to derive that effect on its own, right? Now we're back to trying to alter our function in an unnatural state to achieve more because we're unable to do that on our own, because we're broken to some degree.
And just borrowing from the future, right? You're not getting free energy.
Yeah.
You're taking an advance on your future. You're going to fall even further down.
So
right. And if you have to do that stuff like, you know, drink coffee for energy or something like that, I mean, save it for the race. I mean, save it when it's important. I mean, I used to drink soda during the marathon portion of an Ironman, you know, because of the caffeine and the sugar and the sort of stuff like that. But you would never ever see me drinking it elsewhere, you know. So I mean, so many of these things are just so abused, and I think we just accept them today. I mean, Red Bull and 5-hour energy drinks and all the other stuff that you can just use to push your body to get through the day it's kind of out of control. And again, it's because people are lacking sleep. There's not enough time in the day to sleep, and we're just, you know, trucking along basically.
You know, I think you kind of answered my question. I just listened to a podcast about the genesis of the company 5-Hour Energy, the guy who invented it. And that's like a multi-million, I think it may even be a billion-dollar
business.
They're on
NASCARs.
They have 91% market share in the energy shot business. And they're everywhere. You go into a gas station, you go to Walmart. Everywhere you go are these 5-Hour Energy. And I've seen out on training runs, I've seen it out at races where people pull these 5-Hour Energies out and they slam them. And I've never tried one. I've actually never had a monster drink or anything like that because I just think, boy, artificial stimulant. Now,
slippery slope.
I am a hypocrite. I used to drink a lot of Diet Coke. I don't drink it anymore. But talk to us a little bit about 5-Hour Energy shots. They got to be killing us.
What's
right?
in there?
Yeah. What's in there?
Well, so they'll say, you know, and this is actually the one question, you know, you guys sent me, you know, the listeners might think you and I talk before these podcasts, but all these questions are all surprise to me, except for this 5-Hour Energy one. You guys did tell me you were going to hit me with this one. So I actually did look it up because I wanted to make sure. I mean, I've seen that at gas stations too. I myself have, like you, have never had one, but I've actually asked patients, you know, who I know have been using them. It's usually younger kids, of course. And they all tell me the same thing. Like, they don't last 5 hours. Usually after 3 hours, if you even get that far, you're dropping quick. I mean, it's gonna jack you up and you're gonna drop quick if you don't get another one in you. So this is not like healthy energy. You know, when you look at their website and they talk about their ingredients, you know, they talk about, well, hey, this is B vitamins, you know, this is some amino acids like tyrosine's in there and phenylalanine. And of course there's caffeine attributable to about the amount of a normal cup of coffee. But the thing is, this is, now, of course, they don't tell you there's also sucralose in there, which is an artificial sweetener. There's natural and artificial flavors in there. So it's not like this is a natural type drink. And when you take, you know, so when you take something out of its natural content, you're going to get a different effect from it than if it's in its natural content. So let me rephrase that maybe, or give an example, might be easier for me to say or to describe what I mean. So, you know, you take like coffee and you get a good coffee bean and you grind it and, you know, you drink your coffee and it's, you know, hasn't been in a can forever, especially, but it's a good coffee bean, organically grown, all that jazz. You know, now the caffeine is naturally contained in there, and it also contains a lot of the or the necessary nutrients you need to detoxify it and metabolize it. Like niacin is actually one of those. Vitamin B3 is high in caffeinated plants. So this is a natural state where the caffeine is contained with the substances that it is naturally occurring with. Now, when you use a synthetic source of the drug, the caffeine, and you're just throwing it with other synthetic vitamins and minerals and nutrients, now you've altered this. So you're going to get a much more a different effect. Let's say in this case a stimulatory effect, and you know you're also giving someone a false. It's not true energy. It's a stimulant, right? I mean, it should really be called 5-hour stimulant. It's not energy. And I think people just use these words, you know, the language is used incorrectly because it's, you know, what is energy? I mean, we can all have, you know, perhaps different definitions of those. I mean, energy to me is enough mental and physical stamina to get throughout the day and perform what I need to perform, you know, whether that be talking to you guys and hopefully not stumbling over my words too much, you know, be clear thinking. To be able to run, to be able to work, to be able to interact with people, my family, and whoever else. And I have the energy to do that without the need to rest somewhere in there. So now again, we're back to, hey, Steve needs to nap. Like, you know, I'm tired after talking to you guys for an hour. So I need to go nap. Is that normal? Is that healthy? Did I overtax my brain? Did I overtax my body or, you know, from this conversation or from a run? And do I need now an energy drink to sustain me longer? Mm. Right? Because I really shouldn't. Or I have to look at, okay, why was I not able to perform that task, this podcast or that run I may do or did this morning? Like, why is my energy perhaps plummeting at a certain time? But instead people are like, ah, screw that. I'm just going to hit an energy drink, or I'm going to drink more coffee, or I'm going to take this pill, this substance, so I can, you know, mask those symptoms, those signs, and push myself so I can, you know, keep on going and not recover. right?
Instead of looking at good restful sleep as a, you know, you're not getting good restful sleep, or maybe you're not eating a good diet that allows you to get the fuel to give you the energy, right?
Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, I'm trying to think like, okay, when would I entertain a 5-hour energy drink? I mean, I guess the one time I could think of someone, you know, if it's like a life or death, you know, if it's the soldier, like who needs to stay awake, you know, literally cannot stay awake any longer. And that's what's going to give him or her a jolt to, you know, get to the next point of safety or whatever, or a pilot who needs to stay awake to land their plane, whatever it may be, like, you know, an extreme situation. But these are just used all the time. I mean, it's almost as someone's like daily nutrients. You know, they take like, oh, I take my 5-hour energy in the morning and I take it in the early afternoon, and that's how they live.
Yeah, I remember seeing one time the guy in front of me at Costco had the Costco size package of 5-hour energy. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's like, I don't know, 30 of those things. I'm thinking, holy cow.
And I think a huge risk. You know, we look at this generation and we reflect back to, say, the 1940s. I wasn't around then, although, you know, you may claim that I was by looking at me. As you look at that generation, smoking was permitted. It was okay. It was cool. It was in the movies. Heck, they used to put cigarettes in the sea rats for the guys out in, you know, the soldiers out in the field. It was it was okay to be a smoker. And now I think it's okay to be an energy drinker, at least in society's eyes. It's everywhere. I mean, you go into the convenience store and boom, they've got rows and rows and racks, and nobody gives you a dirty look for
grabbing one.
There's more
energy drinks than there is soda.
And so,
well, and even you take a place like Whole Foods and health food stores, they have their own versions of these drinks, right? So it's even in the health food market, they just don't have the sucralose and the artificial flavors in them, but they still have the caffeine and all the other shit in them. You know?
There's some that are dressed up as very healthy and wholesome and organic and everything else, and dressed up in a nice package, but still just as bad for you.
Yeah.
So I think we got off course, not really, because all of it was good. We had some good views, good sights, but
have we ever stayed on course?
No. I mean, we started off with Oregon, sleeping Oregons. We had no clue we were going there. How do you get good sleep? Yeah. How do you design? Scott's original question.
We talked about why it's important. Now, how can we get good restful sleep? What things can we do? Strategies.
Well, sure. Well, there's the obvious things, you know. Complete blackout of your room, you know, blackout shades, no street lights shining into your eyes. Definitely no computer, no technology in your room. I mean, it's amazing how many people use their phones to wake up, you know, their smartphones. I mean, those really should be off, or have to keep your iPhone on your whatever to for the alarm. It should be at least 3 feet away from you. Those are general healthy recommendations. You know, no computer on, no TV on in the room. I mean, I think, you know, your bedroom should not even have those things in them anyway. So it's low light, or no light, I should say, no technology, cool temperature. You know, your body, as we said earlier, your body is going to produce more healthy sleep hormones when the temperature is lower. So you do want a cooler room to sleep at night, you know. I mean, other things.
How about earplugs? How about listening to earplugs themselves? But how about falling asleep to your favorite podcast and putting that? Is that very disruptive? Because I've put some audio in my ear and boom, I'm asleep in like a half a second. But I don't know how disruptive.
That's because you're listening to your own show.
and it's making you fall asleep.
It was mostly good, the ones with you on it, Dr. Gan Jimmy.
One. So, sock doc.
So people, you know how we've all heard like someone needs the TV to fall asleep?
Right.
Okay, so I would put that in this category. That's actually a dopamine, which is one of our brain neurotransmitters, right? Uh-huh. Dopamine, you know, has to do with drive. We talked about this on another podcast, I think, way back. It has to do with, you know, like the desire to like win a race and like thrive and do well throughout the day. That's dopamine, one of our brain chemicals. So, so when someone has to keep the TV on at night, or they need like background noise, and this is not just to block out, you know, the neighbor's dog barking or whatever, then that's pretty much means they have some dopamine imbalance, some brain chemical imbalance, which could be for many reasons, the dietary issues, stress, that sort of thing. So no, that's not healthy.
So the dopamine imbalance. So what would I want to do with my diet to address dopamine imbalance?
So usually that's, again, it's not really just a, it's sometimes, or a lot of times, maybe not just a dietary issue. It typically means you're overtraining mentally, physically. You know, you're just too wound up and too much with you know, you're short on time, right? You're trying to push yourself too hard throughout the day, and you know, you're either not making dopamine because you're using up those nutrients, like the vitamins and minerals needed to make dopamine in your body, or you could have a digestive dysfunction because a lot of your neurotransmitters are made in your gut. 50% of dopamine, actually, 98 to 99% of your serotonin, which we all know is for like a depression type hormone relationship. So those are made in your digestive tract. So that gets back to like gut health, you know, eating healthy foods, and simply put. So
that describes a lot of us, especially those that are quote unquote endurance athletes. They don't mind pushing. They kind of thrive on the push, and that
exactly.
And that moves throughout the rest of their day too. I like to have 7 tasks on my list. I'm kind of bummed out if there's only 2 things left. I like to keep things moving fast and try to accomplish them.
Well, and to right. that, and to that point, Don, you know, as endurance athletes, you are trained to push beyond discomfort. And so to listen to your body and the cues to say, you know what, I need more sleep. Most of us think, I don't need more sleep. I can push through this. I'm tired, but I need to push through this. Just like if you were out there training and pushing through a low spot on a trail or something like that.
Yeah, like Steve
said,
kind
of an oxymoron there.
Like Steve said earlier, you know, sleep is for the weak.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be weak, you know, push. But we need to change that paradigm and say,
sleep is training.
And sleep is training. And I am human, and it's okay to you know, take a small nap.
I like that part of training. It's easy.
It's the best. It's my best part. You know,
it's the best part. I excel. My form is perfect. My gait and sleep is perfect.
Typically, I like to do repeats as well.
Fartlek sleep,
all of those, yes. Hey, have you experienced yourself, Dr. Gan, Jimmy, or with any of your patients, and said, you know what, turn off that electricity, turn off the lights, go low energy stuff towards the end of the day, and see how that changes? Because people could say, I just can't shut down. I'm just go until, you know, I pass out. Do you turn down some of the volume in life at the end of the day? Have you worked with patients with that?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably my bad habit. I mean, you know, my wife and I are always watching, you know, I mean, we watch Game of Thrones, you know, from 10 to 11 o'clock at night. That's not like the show to watch before you go to bed.
You're a Game of Throner.
I am. Yeah.
He probably has a costume in his closet.
I think he's in the costume
he
now.
He does.
Oh, my goodness.
He has figurines.
And I'm proud to say I don't know which figure is.
I have no idea.
It's a guy with an axe.
I've actually never seen an episode of Game of Thrones.
Who's your favorite Dr. Gan, Jimmy, who's your favorite character? Are there characters on there?
Oh yeah. I mean, I don't really have a favorite character. I guess I'll take the default that you know, who doesn't like Jon Snow on Game of Thrones?
Well, you know, I'm not gonna argue with that because I have no argument. Right. Okay, back to the topic.
Back to sleep.
Okay. Yeah, I mean,
do you watch in bed at 11?
No, we don't have a TV. We don't have a TV in our bedroom.
I think that's a bad thing, right? Take the TV out of the bedroom, right?
It is a bad thing. Actually, it's funny because, you know, 3 years ago we built our own house from we you know, designed our own house, and the electrician was like, "All right, so where do I put, you know, the outlets, the ports, you know, the Ethernet ports or any cable ports in the bedrooms, you know, the kids' bedrooms in our bed?" I'm like, "No, we don't want any of those," and he just thought we were insane. So we didn't even wire our house for that sort of thing. And, you know, there's no wireless in there, at least, you know, that we use. So that shouldn't even be part of, your bedroom, actually. I mean, I've noticed when I've, you know, camped and, you know, been to courses and there's no technology, you know, around where, you know, you're hanging out with other people in the group and you're, in some cases we were around campfires or we're cooking and, you know, then you're just hanging out after. I mean, you definitely, it's weird because, right, you feel like 9 o'clock is later and you're like, yeah, I'm just going to go to bed. And if you were at home, you might be like, all right, let's go watch TV for a couple hours. So, you know, we all get into these, you know, that's my bad habit, I guess. I mean, do I do it every night? No. I mean, we watch, you know, maybe 3 or 4 hours of TV a week. It's not like it's a 2-hour a night sort of thing. So
At that race, we recently checked in the night before the race. Quality hotel.
That sounds fancy.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, did you share a bed in there to save a little bit more money?
No, no, we didn't need to share a bed because we are offered quite a discount.
Yes.
The funny thing is, we walk in there. There's an 8-year-old kid working the front desk.
Yeah.
No shirt on.
Without a shirt.
And maybe eating every hour of his entire life.
Cheetos.
A bit overweight. He never looked
up. He was jacked up on 5-hour energy.
He was probably down on him. Yeah. And he didn't even look up from the screen. He says, the manager's in the bath. He says it with a straight face, taking a bath. and so when the manager finally came out, she said, I'm going to give you $30 off on your hotel room. And we said, oh.
So it was free.
Thank you. No.
Actually, not far from it.
and we said,
What was the room rate?
It was $97. And she reduced it to $67. And her rationale was, the TV doesn't work.
Oh, nice.
And I said, great. You know, that
we're going to watch TV anyway.
I pretend like we did. You know, we love TV. Yeah. That's barely enough, but we'll take it.
So in her mind, a room, 30% of the cost of the room was a TV.
We walked in and there was a TV there.
There were two.
And then we opened the closet and there was another TV there. We thought, what are we going to do with these things? We got to get rid of them.
Oh, that's great.
So to the TV, the value of a TV. What about chronic injuries, just sticking around, lack of sleep? Mm-hmm. Ever, you know, my knees bother me. It's not, but it's bothering me and somebody's complaining about it. Is sleep ever an issue with that?
Yeah. I mean, sure. I mean, it can definitely be. It depends, again, on what's causing that. If someone's not recovering properly, sure. I mean, you can look at any part of that, again, back to like overtraining or inability to heal from an injury because you're not recovering properly. And that just doesn't mean just in this case, like you're staying off your feet and not irritating the ligaments or the tendons or whatever you injured around your knee, but you're actually recovering properly.
Hmm. So again, let's get back to some if someone's listening to this podcast, they have bought in on the premise that I'm an endurance athlete, I need to get better quality, restful sleep. What are some strategies that we can give them to have good sleep? We said take the TV out, put the screens away, the blue screens away, make your room dark. Mm-hmm. What are some other things that we can do? So
here's another one for athletes, all athletes, but obviously especially endurance athletes is, be mindful of when your training is, right? So doing a high intensity anaerobic type workout, you know, repeats, hill repeats, fartleks, whatever, you know, and jacking up your cortisol levels late into the evening, typically not a good idea, right? Mm. Because our melatonin levels and our cortisol levels are inversely related to one another. So as our melatonin levels go up at night, our cortisol levels should be lower. Our cortisol levels should be lowest around 10 p.m. to midnight, and then they slowly creep up and they're highest around 6, 7, 8 a.m. tops, inversely related to our melatonin levels. So if you can imagine your cortisol levels, and there's actually a significant drop in your cortisol levels in a healthy human being from that 7 a.m. time period till noon, they dropped about half, and then they trickle down the next 10 hours from noon-ish to 10. So if you can imagine as your cortisol levels are trickling down, you go and do a high intensity workout and now you stimulate your cortisol levels at say 5, 6 o'clock at night, that can easily disrupt your sleep as they're going in the wrong direction and impair now your melatonin levels, right? Hmm. So a lot of people, again, it gets back to, and I think we've talked about this on probably every podcast the three of us have done, where you have to, you know, listen to your body because your sleep is a great representation of your overall health. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can make the room dark. You can make sure the dog's not barking and the room temperature is right and all the technology's off and all these things. And just, you know, you either maybe don't fall asleep, you've got some insomnia, or you're asleep and you're waking up a lot, or you wake up and can't get back to sleep. And these are all indications that something is awry, something is not right in your daily activities. Again, that caffeine intake, like we were saying earlier, if you're drinking too much coffee for your own self, you might be done with that coffee by even 8, 9 in the morning. That can be affecting. That can be the reason why you're waking up at 2 in the morning, you know, that next night. And you might not think about that.
So what I hear you saying is just because I fall asleep doesn't mean that I'm sleeping well. Just because I pass out and my eyes are closed and I don't know what's going on around me doesn't mean I'm getting the most restful sleep that I can.
Now, right. So here's what I think of is you should fall asleep within 15 minutes easily of going to bed. Okay. Uh-huh. You should actually be asleep. You should not be lying there, you know, staring at the ceiling. So you should be asleep within 15 minutes, and then you should stay asleep the entire night without waking up to hit the bathroom, without waking up, you know, to turn over because you have pain or you're thinking of something, whatever. You should stay asleep, and then you should wake up, whether that's 6, 7, 8 hours, maybe 9 in some cases, more for younger kids, and you should wake up feeling rested, right? You shouldn't be waking up with pain. You shouldn't be waking up groggy. I'm not saying you're waking up and you're throwing open the sash and saying, hello, son, and what a grand day and all this, but,
with,
you know.
With an accent? You have to say it
exactly.
With an accent.
Exactly. But, you
good
know,
morning.
Good morning. You should wake up, you know, feeling good and not like, oh, shit, another day, right? Or where's my coffee? And I can't function until I hit my coffee. So that to me is normal sleep. So even, you know, getting up in the middle of the night, and I've, you know, this happened to all of us, and especially in my hardcore training days, you know, if you're getting up at night to go to the bathroom, it's really very rarely is that because you drank too much water. That's typically an adrenal gland issue, electrolyte imbalances, overtraining again. Hey, so it's another indication.
Great, great comment, because I was wondering about that. And when you brought that up earlier, it really started to kind of put the light on it for me. I go to sleep and I wake up when it's the next day. But after this 82-hour mm-hmm. effort, I was up at least twice a night needing to use the restroom. And I was like, what the heck? Did I break myself? Did all of a sudden I become like a prostate guy I have a diabetes now and I need to, what happened to me? Is this my new normal? And I'm hoping not. And as the inflammation went down that I was holding in my feet and my lower legs that just happened to manifest, when that decreased, now all of a sudden I'm back after, you know, 8 or 9 days, I'm back into normal sleep cycle. But I was like waking up going, what in the heck is going on with me? I wake up at 2 and at 4:30 and this is not normal.
So that's actually great that you can share that, because now think about if that was your normal every night, because that's normal for so many people. I mean, and I'm glad you brought that up, because for us guys, it can be a prostate issue, you know, where you're waking up every couple hours. But a lot of people, women included, are waking up, you know, 1, 2, 3 times a night just to go to the bathroom. And it has to do with an overtaxed body and electrolyte. It's actually the hormone aldosterone, which is one of our three main adrenal gland hormones, along with DHEA and cortisol, our adrenal cortex hormones. Aldosterone levels regulate our sodium potassium in our body. So what you did, obviously, in that run, because let's just face it, it was awesome that you did that. I think it's amazing. But it's too much for a human to do that all in one day. Like, you just, you know, it's not natural what you did, right? I mean, hope you can agree with that.
Yeah,
I mean, it's awesome, but it's not natural.
No, it was right? It was something you don't want to do all the time, that's for sure.
Just in 17 more days.
Not again. But anyway, so just let me finish that thought real quick, if you don't mind. So you recognize that's your body being like, hey, now I'm recovering. Those are your warning signs that you're still in recovery phase by you waking up that much. But so many people are like that every night. They're waking up twice a night to go to the bathroom, and that's just how they live. And you know, you saw this as a major stress response, and now as you're recovering, you can see it go away. So that's super cool. Unfortunately, many people don't have it go away. It's just they're normal and they think, oh, it's because I drink too much during the day or whatever. And it's actually not true.
Yeah, and not very restful either. You know, you got to get back into that sleep cycle.
Oh, of course.
It takes time to get back into that. So it was very disruptive.
Yeah. So there are a ton of wearable devices now that track sleep.
Yeah.
In fact, Don's wearing one. I'm wearing one right now. I don't look at that data, but are those good? Can they actually tell you whether you're getting a restful sleep or how much you toss and turn? What's your experience?
I do not believe they can, because they cannot measure EEG activity of your brain. Mm. I mean, they're basically tracking movement, but it's not normal, nor is it healthy for you to fall asleep in any given position, whether that's your backside or belly, and not move. That's not a normal thing to not move while you're sleeping. So the sleep trackers are tracking movement, but they cannot discern what is normal movement and what is abnormal movement. So I call big time bullshit on those.
Okay. What about, you just mentioned there's back sleepers, side sleepers, stomach sleepers. Is there a better position to get restful sleep? Okay.
No, I think that's completely individualized. I mean, yes, I get it. And some people might call me out on this and say, oh, there's clearly studies if you sleep on your side in the fetal position. And, you know, I mean, I've even seen it as far as like right side. I think maybe I have it backwards. Like one side is better than the other one due to the position of your heart. I think a healthy human being's body is smart enough to figure out what is your most efficient position. And you're not going to sleep in a poor position that is going to cause you harm. Here's a great example, actually. You know, how many people, I'm sure you see this, Don, a fellow chiropractor, you know, you get the patient who comes in with a crick in the neck, right? Like, oh, I slept wrong last night. It's typically not because they slept wrong. You might sleep wrong if you're over a friend's house on their couch or a really crappy hotel room. Maybe the Quality Inn. With no
they have attorneys. It wasn't the Quality Inn.
But anyway, just trying to link the whole show up.
Yeah, I got you. It's a callback. It's called a callback in the biz.
That's right. There you go. Anyhow, where was I? So, yeah, so you don't wake up with like a crooked, like your body, if you're in your own bed, own pillow, own mattress, all that, your body's smart enough to be like, hey, dummy, you know, you need to move. You're not going to, you know, a crick in the neck is actually like, in other words, waking up with a sore neck, for those of you not from the South, is actually a digestive problem. Like the number one reason by far, meaning way over 90% of the time, someone wakes up with a sore neck, a stiff neck where they can't turn their neck, it's because of inflammation in the digestive tract from what they ate the day before, meaning typically the night before they went to sleep. And the inflammation is causing digestive problems in their gut, which tractions down your cervical spine and causes pain in your neck. It's not how you sleep. I mean, my wife sleeps flat on her belly with no pillow. I sleep on my back with a little bit of pillow. It does not matter in my mind. In terms of mattresses now, I will say it does matter. Soft mattresses, a lot of people, it's kind of like shoes. People think soft is better and they're more comfortable in like in a soft shoe. They are more comfortable in a soft, comfy pillow top mattress, you know, floating like a cloud. And it's because they have a lot of health ailments, health problems, and therefore they need that extra comfort to sleep better, where really harder is better. Again, much like a shoe, a harder mattress. That's why some proponents in the paleo world or the primal world promote, you know, sleeping on the floor or a very thin mat, you know, to promote health. You know, you can definitely have issues with mattresses that are too soft. And especially, you know, one of the worst, I always have patients and friends ask me, you know, what kind of mattress should you use? You know, of course, a chemical-free mattresses are today, a lot of them are sprayed with terrible chemicals as fire retardants and other preservative-type materials. And the Tempur-Pedic mattresses are by far the worst mattresses and the most expensive. These mattresses that you can put a glass of wine on one end and jump on the other and the wine doesn't move, that's not a good thing unless you're on a hard floor. It's if something impacts your force that much and absorbs your motion, it's actually creating a shell around your body and preserving a what you might say is a lesion, and I don't mean that like as a cut, but like a dysfunction part of your body while you're sleeping. In other words, if you have a bad shoulder, a bad hip, a bad back, and you lay in one of these mattresses, your body is going to find it very difficult to move during your sleep cycles, during your sleep, to get away from that problem area. You know, some movement is necessary and healthy, and the mattresses almost act like a cast supporting your body like an orthotic in the foot in a shoe, which is not a healthy thing to do. You might feel better because it's supporting problems, but it's not allowing you to heal and recover as well as you should. So harder, firmer is definitely better. If you can't handle harder or firmer, you should ideally work your way towards that. Unfortunately, as we all know, it's not as easy as like doing that with footwear. You just don't want to go ditch a several $1,000 mattress. But, you know, some of these mattresses, you can start, you know, maybe removing like the pillow top portion of it, or you know, putting it on the floor rather than some box spring, kind of play around with different things like that.
Well, that's a really good point. And it's the only time that's good is when you don't want your wine to spill. But so exactly. If you have that mattress, but that when is a good sleeping. Point to actually put yourself into your own cast and not move and make it difficult to roll because you're sunk down in that very, very soft surface. Yeah. I think that's good. Hey, you know, my closing comment is, you know, sleep may be the only time we really get out of our own way, where we stop using our own decision-making power to decide how we're going to conduct and make choices. You know, sleep is when the body is on automatic pilot, and we look to allow it to make the best decisions for us. And so I think sleep is an important, you know, reset that happens on a daily basis if we're fortunate enough.
We are going to link SockDoc's article called Sleep, the Other Half of Training, which I think is just a brilliant title, because if you think of it as not a weakness, but this is half of your training is sleep, I think that's really good. I learned a lot from this stuff that we didn't even get into, some of the common things that cause bad sleep, including snoring. I've been accused to be a snorer, and Steve goes into, you know, why snoring may be a sign of not restful sleep. It's a really good article. We'll link that on the podcast description for those three that are reading the podcast descriptions.
You can give me the show notes.
You can
the
link
show
it.
Notes,
yeah.
Scott.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we look at the animal kingdom, SockDoc. I don't mean to derail us, but we kind of do that in an extra lap here. You know, animals out there sleep quite a bit, and they do it during the day. They do it during the night. There,
my dog sleeps a lot.
A lot.
So here's what I would always say to people, and still do, is, you know, we don't. If you saw a raccoon walking in the middle of the day down the road, right? Like at noon here, you'd be like, holy shit, like that thing is rabid. That's crazy, right? Like, don't go near that animal. I mean, it's not supposed to be up right now. It's a nocturnal, you know, it's bright out. But we don't think twice about a human being up at midnight, 2 a.m. Right?
That's a good point.
We don't think twice about it. So it's considered normal today.
You know, we have done many other podcasts with SockDoc. Some of them I will link to this podcast show notes.
The other ones I would rather not talk about.
Well, yeah, actually, I went through and looked at them. There's some that I'm going to go back and re-listen to. We did talk about NSAIDs at one point. We talked about strength training. There was a two- or three-part series on athlete motivation. There was a whole podcast.
That one had the dopamine in it, just
yes.
FYI.
Mm.
The motivation one, yeah.
We did a whole podcast. I don't know if you remember this, Freeman. We did a whole podcast on sex.
Yeah.
We did.
SockDoc talked for an
hour. He slept through it. He slept through it, Scott. Get it?
Yeah. I'm not making a comment there, but I think the rest of you can fill in the blank.
you can find SockDoc on a number of different sites. He referenced some of those, his sites, he calls. There's drganjimmy.com, talks about health, fitness, and life. There's the sock-doc with only one C, .com. Say that again, Freeman.
Sock-doc.com.
Yes. We love that one. That's on natural injury treatment and prevention for athletes. And then there's systemshealthcare.net, which is a new one that I'm not familiar with. Can you tell us a little bit about that one?
Sure, that's my teaching technique for doctors and therapists interested in learning the SockDoc way of natural healthcare. It's how I train. I do small groups. I'm actually teaching in Amsterdam for the second time next month.
Wow.
So, 10 docs over there. So medical doctors, osteopaths, chiropractors, physios. That's that one.
Right on.
Excellent. I think I'm gonna have a better training regime that includes good sleep after this podcast. In fact, I may go take a nap.
I think I'm just going to slow down a little bit. I wonder if I slowed down, if I'd still get just as much done. I think I run around not very efficient sometimes trying to get too much done. I think I'm going to knock.
You're a list guy, you said, right?
I'm a list guy, mental list. I never write it down, but I have a mental list going. Does that count?
Yeah, I think so. But you could put sleep in your mental list, I guess.
There you go.
So I think I'm going to slow down a little bit and become more efficient. That's one of the things I took away from here. Sock Talk, it's been too long, and we need to get you back on the regular so we can continue to learn and promote our own health.
So go out and sleep.
Mas.